This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
And I asked our guy Jeff Mazurek, I go, what do we expect? And he just said,
snow.
Saturday, lake effect snow is going to be heading from Buffalo and then south towards the stadium. There is a chance of steady snow with it possibly becoming heavy right when kickoff starts. Temperatures in the 20 with gusty 30-mile-per-hour winds.
Remember,
lake effect snow, those bands, they're only about 20 miles wide, so it doesn't take much for the snow and then out and it comes a short distance away and whew, I think we're going to have some real weather.
Tua.
He is set. I got to show up Saturday night versus Buffalo in this cold, cold temperature and be able to make plays.
Jason, you said something about temperature. Today in Honolulu, Hawaii, where Tua Tagovailoa went to high school, 80 degrees inside.
Ah, oh, that sounds good.
Today, Buffalo, New York, 21 degrees.
Let's go! That boy is big!
Play at a higher level than we did before.
When it's too tough for them, it's
fires it, intercepted, picked off by Tre'Davious White.
Do you wanna go to snowy?
Good afternoon on a snowy day in Orchard Park.
Precipitation is coming, the temperature is dropping.
That's right, the snow's a-coming. It's now a lake effect snow warning. Welcome to One Bills Live Friday edition as we get you pumped up for what is expected to be a winter wonderland tomorrow night, 8:15, Bills Dolphins. And, yeah, I know it may snow in Alabama, Tua, but not like this. The snow totals have been upped. It went from 12 to 18 to 18 to 24 over the life of the storm. Incidentally, the lake effect snow warning starts tonight at 7 p.m. and runs until Monday, Steve. Yeah. Oh, I love it.
It's not going to be pretty by any standard.
Yeah. So I think one thing for fans that are coming to the stadium, I would plan on putting a shovel in the trunk or rear of your car because from the time you get here to the time you leave after the game, there's very likely to be a foot of accumulation over that period of time. We're not looking, at least right now, at 2 to 3 inches an hour, which is considered heavy lake effect snow.
Right.
The latest reports are indicating about an inch an hour, which is manageable. I think to play a football game, 2 to 3 inches, everything goes out the window. When it goes 2 to 3 inches an hour, you just can't keep up.
Yeah, we've all seen the clips. The snow game in 2017 against, 15 against the Colts.
2017.
Okay. You couldn't keep up with it. It came down so fast. They had guys shoveling and blowing the stuff off. They tried to do the yard markers and the hash marks, all of that. They just couldn't keep up with it. It comes down so fast. This looks like it will be, you know, once they clear it, and then they'll clear it again at halftime. They'll clear it pregame. They'll take the tarp off. And Brownie, I thought it was 90 minutes.
We
it's
saw
not.
Brandon Bean
it's
today.
4 hours before four game. Hours, they got to take the tarp off 4 hours before the game. So they'll do that. And then when they clear the field pregame, they will probably make way for the snow removal if they need it then to clear it off right before kickoff, then again at halftime, if they can. That's the way it used to be done. So we'll see if that's the way it's going to be. It's a problem. It's because it's real. It's going to be a real thing. And Brownie's right. Pack the car knowing you're going to be in for a snowstorm you're going to have to dig in and dig out of. So,
because here's the thing, and I didn't get a chance to talk to stadium operations today. I was going to lob them a phone call, but I figured they're going to be busy enough. I didn't really want to bug them. But when you have stadium lots filled with cars, your plows can't do a whole lot. I mean, they can go up and down the rows.
Drive your SUVs with four-wheel drives. Bring that stuff.
Shovel in the back.
Bring out the heavy gear. Just do yourself a favor and then plan on it. Listen, folks, it's an 8:15 kickoff. It's a three-hour game, give or take, probably going to be 3 hours and 20 at most. So that puts you at 11:45, game over. 11:30 anyway, game over. All right? Traffic is going to be slow and hard. Yeah. It's going to be a late night.
Bring your kindness card. Try to be patient.
Let's remember, you know, let's remember who we represent here.
It's Saturday night. Most of us are not working Sunday.
Plan on a long night after the game. Plan on a long day before the game. Just be ready. It's going to be really, really tough. It's going to be one of those games. You're going to have stories to tell, I can imagine. But, this is a this is a real thing.
Oh, it's happening.
Yeah.
And we were on the air yesterday. We went off the air, I believe, right after it flipped.
Right.
Because it was a Lake Effect.
Before it flipped.
Yeah. It was a Lake Effect storm watch, which means it has a strong possibility of happening. Then it flipped to a Lake Effect storm warning. When it flips to a warning, that means it is imminent.
Yeah,
it is coming.
It's going to happen. I got one per. There are people, you know, social media is awesome because of, you know, both the good and the idiocy that's on it. Yeah. Guys say, well, you know, it's not going to be bad when they're calling it a war, you know, when they're trying to warn you about it 2 days before. You know, they're not going to get it right. Not so much in Buffalo.
Yeah.
Right. It was not a local guy who did that, said that, obviously. And I've said it the last couple of days. When they predict it like this in Buffalo, yeah, they're pretty much right.
Right. And from what we understand, plowing in and out of the rows of cars in the lots is not going to happen.
You can't
do
it.
During or after the game.
Because you plow
people
in.
They're only going to be, you know, taking care of the main arteries like One Bills Drive. That'll get plowed. And, you know, Abbott Road, 20A.
Abbott Road and 20A.
That'll get
plowed.
Southwestern Boulevard. Those will get plowed. But
yeah. They'll go Abbott all the way up north-south.
So bring a shovel in the back of your car if you are coming to the game.
And this is a little different than the November storm we had a month ago because this is going to be south of the city, I think, mostly, right? I mean, it's going to be a narrow band.
Yeah.
It's not going to be 60 inches either. So they're not as worried about the pulling resources away from neighborhoods who may be stove up for a week. It's not going to be like that. So they're going to have – the road, they'll be working hard keeping the roads clear. But man, oh man, think about it, folks. Traffic's going to be a problem. Parking's going to be, you know, you're going to have to be slow and easy. You know, your normal, think about the neighborhoods where you park. I mean, these neighborhoods over in Orchard Park that, you know, off 20A, off Abbott, you know, the Hammer Lot, you know, they're probably not going to get a chance to plow. They're not going to need to plow them probably before the game.
Well, they might.
Right.
It's supposed to start tonight at 7.
And they may not be able to, you know. I mean, they may not want to do that. So you might just say, hey, listen, come at your own risk. You might get stuck here till April. But you know, that's the kind of thing you're looking at. So think about what you're doing and make some adjustments to your normal game day routine because, you know, it's going to be rough. It's going to be a rough game, bro.
Yeah.
I was thinking, all right, 8:15 kick. You want to come? You want to watch it? I mean, I was coming like maybe 2:30 in the afternoon, 3. I don't know, man. I might have to come earlier than that.
Yeah, you may want to build in some extra time, knowing that it's going to be slow go.
Because we got stuff we do over here, you know. I mean, I do post game with Maddie. We kind of wind up for that. You guys do, you know,
field pass before the game. We'll be streaming that.
You stream that before the game.
Well, here's the thing. Not that it's a huge deal. So I go do pregame radio, and then right from there, I have to come across the parking lot here to the studio to do the pregame show. So I'll get a real taste for what we're going to be looking at for the game.
Yeah. The warning starts tonight at 7. Is that still in?
7 p.m. tonight. It runs through Monday. Now, Friday and Saturday,
awesome.
You know, Southern Erie County, the South Towns, they're supposed to get most of it from Friday into Saturday night. And then as we drift into Sunday and Monday, I guess most of it's supposed to go down to the Southern Tier. And the Southern Tier is going to be, you know, directly in line to get pounded for like Sunday and Monday until the thing ends. But Friday and Saturday, it's going to be right here in this neck of the woods where we sit right now. So, yes, it's going to be interesting to say the least.
Let's go.
So let's get to some of the player availability notes. yesterday, in essence, was the final injury report of the week. So the designations for the game came out. We did announce them on the air yesterday. We didn't announce Miami's, but we did announce Buffalo's. And it's basically Ryan Bates and Jordan Phillips who will not play. The anticipation is Greg Van Roten will start at right guard for Bates, who's out with the ankle injury. Phillips going to miss a second straight game with the shoulder injury. But everybody else that was a little dinged and limited in practice during the week, they don't even have a designation for Sunday. So essentially, Matt Milano, Ed Oliver, Reggie Gilliam, all good to go for Saturday night's game. So that's good news. As for the Dolphins, it's an interesting list. The two players who are out both play the safety position, namely Eric Rowe and Elijah Campbell. So the backup, I made a couple of calls yesterday after the injury report came out. The general consensus out of Miami is that the other safety playing opposite Javon Holland, the other starter, will be rookie Verone McKinley. He has one start this season earlier in the year, so he will make his second career start on Saturday night, provided that, you know, the information I got was accurate, and there's no reason to think it isn't. And, you know, you think about what the Dolphins may want to do defensively in terms of disguise and changing the look from pre-snap to post-snap. How limited will McKinley be making only his second start of his career? Now, I believe, if I have this right, that both he and Javon Holland were college teammates at Oregon. So maybe there's a longer working rapport with the two of them than here with the Miami Dolphins. But still in all, it's a young, inexperienced player. So I'm curious to see how that all shakes out. It doesn't look like the Dolphins are going to have River Craycraft, who's probably the fourth or fifth receiver in their core. He's got a calf injury. He is doubtful. Then the questionable players of interest, left tackle Teron Armstead, who's been dragging his body around for the better part of a month.
Right.
And his toe situation's not going to get better. He's going to need surgery after the season's over. He's got a pec and a knee injury as well. So he's hobbling around out there. And if the conditions are poor, Steve, in terms of footing and things like that, he's listed as questionable. The general consensus is he's going to play, but if the footing's poor and all that, I mean, that can't be good for a guy with a knee and a toe problem.
It's really a problem for guys that are hurt because, you know, think about it, particularly if you got a toe or a knee or whatever, if you're running around, you try and stop and start and plant to cut, to change direction, and your foot slips out. I mean, we've all been there where your knee blows out. You know, you feel it in your knee when it happens. It's just really, really.
And don't things tend
to. You feel frail. Yeah. For these guys who are huge, strong, you feel frail because if you move the wrong way or get caught in a position, it hurts. And, you know, without knowing the severity of Armstead and all these other guys who are struggling with hurts, and, you know, Mitch Morse is the same thing, and all these guys that have, you know, Milano. You really feel frail when you're out there on a slippery surface.
Well, and not only that, and I experienced this myself, I would assume it's the same for football players. When the weather's colder and you've got an injury, it just aches and hurts more, doesn't it? It's stiffer. It's more. It feels more sore, right?
Every little ache and hurt just
– it's magnified.
Every time you get bumped, it just reverberates.
Especially when it's cold.
It just echoes. Yes. It's like just turning it up for me. You get a spike in your feedback, right? I mean, it's just wow. And listen, we talked a lot about it, you know, how the game was in Miami in week three. I'll see your 140 degrees on the sideline raise you 2 feet of snow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be as difficult, although it's going
to
be just –
karma tends to work that way.
Well, it's just as difficult for the Bills players as it is for the Miami players, except it will be less startling for them because we live in it.
Yeah.
You go to work in it. You come home in it. You go out to eat in it. You go to dinner. You go to the grocery store. You get gas. You live in it. When you walk out that tunnel ready for the game, it's not a slap in your face like it will be for the Dolphin players. When they get off that charter today, the Dolphin players will arrive in town today.
You probably landed right around now. Maybe a little later.
I'm telling you, it's a slap in the face. You get off that, that jet, and you walk down that stairs on the tarmac. Oh my gosh.
Hello.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
The only other injury of note, running back Jeff Wilson. He's the guy that they acquired at the trade deadline from San Francisco. Obviously knows the Miami scheme since it comes directly from San Francisco. He suffered a hip injury in the Sunday night game last week against the Chargers. Did not return to the game. He did not practice on Tuesday or Wednesday. And let me just tell you, Tuesday they did not practice. It was an estimation. Wednesday the Dolphins had a walkthrough. And then they had some kind of session on Thursday before flying out today. He is listed as questionable as well. Raheem Mostert is one of their other top two backs, and he's not considered 100% either. He's been dealing with a nagging knee, at least according to reporters down there, that his knee hasn't been 100%. He's not on the injury report, but whatever. So that's kind of how it shapes up in terms of injury designations and who may or may not play. I know a lot of fans are wondering about Cole Beasley. And the Bills have until 4 p.m. tomorrow to elevate practice squad players if they choose to do so. Beasley, you know, is a guy that is probably going to be under the microscope to see if he is one of those players that is elevated for the game. And, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show because, as you know, here on Friday, the OBL Friday fan mailbag is open. Any questions you have about the Bills or the NFL at large, submit them to us at One Bills Live, and we'll try to get to as many of them as we can through the course of the show. Just to let you know what else is lined up, we have Tailgate Friday coming up a little bit later on in the hour where we will find out exactly what your tailgate plans are in terms of your menu. If you want to throw in your weather plans to shield your precious tailgate food from the weather, you let us know about that as well. That's going to be half the battle.
Yeah.
I mean, you better have a like one of those pop-up, you know, canvas canopies or something, and then you better have some cinder blocks to hold it down.
Right. You better, yeah, tie it to the vehicle. yeah, it's planning. Today is a planning day. You got to get it together.
Yeah.
And I would recommend, I don't know, a bunch of Bills fans are going to be there. I had that conversation kind of tongue-in-cheek. Is this a game you have to get rid of your tickets or you have to keep them? I think it's a have to keep them game.
I do too.
You got to be here, folks. You got to be at this one. The Miami Dolphins, don't forget how week three ended. They ran out of time to spike it for a winning field goal because they, you know, couldn't get out of bounds, couldn't get the ball spotted. On a game where they absolutely ran all over them and couldn't get that win. It's the Ken Dorsey revenge game for the fit he threw in the press box. It's all of that stuff in this. Let alone the division that's on the line, let alone the number one seed that's on the line, let alone that's in December in Buffalo, and that they gave it and they wouldn't give us misters on the sideline to keep our guys from falling out with heat exhaustion. So it's that here. Let's go. You got to be here.
Yeah.
You got to get here.
Right.
You got to and come ready, not just with, you know, hats and coats and mittens and leg warmers and heated vests and all the gear.
Heated vests.
And the tailgate. But when you get in the stadium.
Be loud.
Give it to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, Bruce Lee, let's go. Let's push all our chips to the middle of the table and show them.
This is the week to do it.
Yeah. We got to throw out our ace in the hole right here.
This week's game sponsor, by the way, is Toyota. Toyota is the exclusive and official vehicle of the Buffalo Bills. Toyota, let's go places. Let's go around the NFL here quickly, Steve, as we had a Thursday night game between the Seahawks and the who the heck did they
play? Niners.
Niners, thank you. In an NFC West showdown, and the Niners essentially put a bow on what will be an NFC West title for them, as they put more distance between themselves and the Seahawks, winning 21-13. By the way, around the NFL, presented by Kalata Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. And Kyle Shanahan said it after the game, Steve. Brock Purdy is the most poised rookie he's ever coached.
Yeah.
17-26 last night for 217 yards and two touchdowns. Now, Seattle does not bring the best defense to the table. You know, the Legion of Boom has come and gone. They're not the defensive stalwart they once were. But, yeah, I mean, Purdy's done exactly what they need him to do. Just make a handful of good plays in the passing game, and then let that schemed running game that has always worked under Shanahan do its thing and get the ball in the hands of Kittle and McCaffrey.
Yeah, what he's doing is really well, and you can call it whatever, you're game manager. I don't know. He's playing better than that. But what he's doing is, like Robert Saleh said about Mike White, he's making the easy stuff look easy. He's executing at a high level, and every once in a while, maybe less than a handful of times a game, he does something, whether it's running for a first down or whatever, does something really sharp with the football and gives it, but he does give his team a chance to win, and he's good enough to do something when they need him to. But they're so good that it's not ever where he's got to carry him on his back at all. No question about it. Their running game is phenomenal. Their offensive line, defensive line, all that. Brock Purdy is, and I think, you know, it's really, it's this just in. Coaching matters.
Oh, yeah.
They are handling him perfect. They know what he can do. They've got a system that's built for a quarterback like Jimmy Garoppolo. Purdy's playing better than Garoppolo did at any point, in my opinion.
I would think he has over the last couple of weeks.
And that, a lot
and
of that has
nothing
to do with
spectacular. It's just steady play, avoiding mistakes.
And
that's
you know
all
what?
You need.
Here's the thing.
With that crew in San Fran.
What I noticed about Purdy is that if there's an open guy, he finds him. He's never looking the wrong way. He never misses a guy that's running wide. I mean, now he does, I'm sure, because there's always guys who do that. But if there's a guy that's open, it seems like, man, he finds him. And if not, he just gets it down to Christian McCaffrey's not a bad option, you know. There's people, and we go through this every week in almost every matchup. When a team comes out and plays against a good opponent, like the Niners did last night against the Seahawks, all of a sudden people are going, you know what? We might look at a rookie, last guy picked in the draft, winning the Super Bowl. I mean, they're already talking like that, these guys are going to win the Super Bowl because they're such a complete team. And that's how good they're looking right now. So. Yeah. It's a week-to-week league, folks, and this week started out, it belongs to the Niners.
The only other quick note we have to get to concerns the AFC East, and Mike White is not going to start for the Jets this weekend against the Lions. White is not being cleared by the medical staff for contact, and because of that, he cannot play on Sunday. Zach Wilson is back in the starting lineup at quarterback for the Jets. Now, Mike White has only been listed as having bruised ribs. The medical staff won't clear him. He has practiced this week on a limited basis, but it's going to be Zach Wilson on Sunday. And Robert Saleh, the head coach of the Jets, Steve, said they may not even have Mike White back in time for their Thursday night game next week against the Jaguars.
Okay, I get it. He got hit and he got whacked and he took some shots. Here's the problem I have with the whole thing and the way is handled. In the week 3 game, Tua gets out and was wobbly when he gets up and fakes it and tells him he's not concussed when the next week he's out and now he's out for 3 games. That happens. Then the Jets come in here, and unless Mike White got hit in the tunnel after the game, some medical staff for the Jets said, no, he's good to play. Give him a shot. Get him back out there. Now they're saying, no, he can't clear him for contact. Why can't he take a shot and go out and play when you let him play in the second half or the third quarter or fourth quarter of the Bills game? I mean, what's the difference now? Did he get worse?
I don't know how he got worse if he's practicing.
They let him play.
Yeah. What changed?
He's not getting better. He's getting worse now. They got an X-ray machine in the building. I don't know what,
Yeah.
There you go.
This is it for Zach Wilson. You don't show up and show out and play well against the Lions. I think his time is done with the Jets. The Jets season is hanging in the balance this week at 7-6?
Hold on, I got you. The Jets are 7-6.
And six. Their season's hanging in the balance here. You don't win this game, you're 7-7. You got too many people leapfrogging you now.
Here's the thing.
Down you slide. He's
told
done.
You this, Brownie, here's where I sit. The worst possible outcome for the New York Jets in this game is for Zach Wilson to play well.
Why? Because it just muddies the waters?
Yeah. Because he's
not. And if he doesn't play well, you know you're done. You wipe your hands up.
At this point, he's not the guy. From my million miles away, In my opinion, that is not the guy. Mike White is a better option for them. If it's, he's a better option right now, he's a better option going forward too. Zach Wilson, that's the worst possible scenario. If he comes in, how about this? He lights it up in a loss.
He's not lighting it up.
Right?
I don't think so. I am feeling better about my Lions pick this week, though.
That's just luck. Come on, man.
I don't have good luck very often.
You ain't getting any credit for that.
I don't have good
luck
very often.
You're not getting any credit for that. But man, I think it's the worst possible scenario for Mike, for Zach Wilson to come in and play well.
Yeah. I hear you.
Or at least not stink.
That's going to be very interesting to see how things go this week for the Jets. And then on a short week against the Jaguars next Thursday night. We have to take a break here because when we come back, we're going to be joined by this week's legend of the game. Who's it going to be on Saturday night getting you all amped up with the snow coming down? We'll let you know next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Pleased to be joined in studio now by this week's legend of the game. It is former Bills safety Aaron Williams joining us here. And legend of the game is presented, as always, by the BFLO Store, the official retailer of the Buffalo Bills. You can download and visit the Bills app and enter for a chance to win a $250 BFLO Store gift card and a signed Aaron Williams football. Friday, December 16th, that's today, 5 to 6 p.m., Aaron will be at the BFLO Store on Transit Road. It's just south of the Eastern Hills Mall, and he'll be there for autograph signings 5 to 6 p.m. tonight. And you may want to do that because that's before any of this snow is supposed to start flying. Saturday, December 17th, pregame. He's going to be doing the Corona leaping through the lots. He's going to be visiting fans in the lots via golf cart with Billy Buffalo. Hope you guys got a windshield on that thing. You're going to need it tomorrow. Tomorrow afternoon, man.
Wear a hat.
And
oh, my gosh.
They better have four-wheel drive on that golf cart.
Look, I've been a part of this, so I'm ready. I've been here long enough to not be ready, prepared for it.
Right, yeah. It's not It's not going to catch you off guard.
No,
right?
Not at all.
Yeah.
So tell us, like, when you hear there's going to be a snow game for Buffalo, is there one that comes to mind for you when you played? Like, immediately, give me a snow game that comes to mind immediately for you from your playing career. Is there one that pops into your head that you can think of?
I would probably think my rookie year against Miami. Yeah, that's crazy, against Miami.
Yeah.
2011, I believe it was. But it wasn't really like a crazy snow game like y'all had against Indy, I think, a couple years ago.
It wasn't accumulating on the
field. But you can see, like, the snow come down. Yeah. That was, like, the only real snow game I had. But when I hear, like, snow is coming, I think of instantly the Snowvember storm that I was a part of 2016.
14, when we had to go 14? To Detroit.
Dang, 14, 14. Yeah, we had to go to Detroit. Dang, yeah. That was long ago.
2014.
But, yeah, that's Snowvember. The first thing that came up to popped in my mind. I saw on my Twitter people show me their driveways and what it looked like outside. And I was like, man, I remember that when the snow was halfway up my driveway and my garage.
And how did you get to the, I know Scott Chandler came on a snowmobile. How did you get here?
I got picked
to
up.
Get out, you know, to get out to the airport.
I got picked up. I wasn't in a snowmobile, but they had just plowed our streets. Okay. So I was able to, unfortunately, go on a normal car. I wish I had a cool story to say I got snowmobile, but no, I just went.
We had the conversation for a couple of days. When you first hear, oh, it's going to be a cruddy day, should I get rid of my tickets and stay home and watch the game? But as it gets closer and it gets worse and worse, this is a game you kind of got to go to, right? If you're a fan, you got to be there.
If you're
a
true Bills fan, a true Bills Mafia member, you want to go to the worst games. You want to go to, like, the snowstorm games because those are the best games possible. I mean, that's just
– there's more stories coming
out.
There are
way more
stories.
Fun, and, you know, as a player, we love to – I mean – I know it sounds weird, but I love playing in the snow and stuff. Just it's in our territory. We're in our backyard, so a little advantage.
It's almost a badge of honor, I think, for Bills fans just to say, hey, I was there. I was at that game.
Right.
I stood out in that for 3.5 hours and watched that thing, and it was awesome, every last minute of it. What do you make of this Bills team and the way they have kind of kept on keeping on with all the injuries they have had this year? I realize every team has injuries. Nobody's going to feel sorry for the Bills. But now they're finally getting a little bit healthier here, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. Just weathering that storm through the course of a season and still winning football games?
I mean, honestly, can we just give a round of applause for our GM, Money Bean? Like, he's done a great job. He's allowed this team to not only be the strength as a starters, but the backups and the backups. Mm. Like, we are a real deep roster. A lot of the guys, you know, when we had Hyde go down, those guys, like, it's like we didn't miss a beat. They came in, they made an impact. And for a team, to have a great team, you must have starters and really good backups, because in this game, injuries are going to happen. It's part of this game. It's about, you know, the guy that's named being called, how can he fill in that spot? And unless I'm wrong, I haven't felt like the guys that are not starters that came in, that they missed a beat. I feel like they on the flow, making plays. Our record speaks for itself. I mean, it should be better, honestly, in my opinion. But these guys are doing their jobs. Like, they are working hard. And it's hard to be a backup because you're not getting the many reps in practice like the starters do. So for them to come in and make an impact that they have, I'm impressed, honestly, because it's hard to have a backup compensate from your starter. And a lot of really good teams have those. So, shout out to Money Bean.
No question. And it's been – the Bills were the Super Bowl favorite coming in. They were big favorite. People were loving what the Bills had done. Didn't know how it was going to turn out. But still, even, you know, before that opening Thursday night game in L.A., this was the team that people were going to be chasing. The tough game to end the season last year in Kansas City, two years in a row, just missing out on the one seed a year ago. So now – you know, deep into it, it has been proven to be true. They have had the most difficult schedule of anybody in the league, and they've been really more injured than they've been over the past 3 years, even combined probably.
Right.
And they're still the one seed coming into week 15 of the season. What do you think is important now for the mindset of the players and the coaches? Certainly they got to want to win every game, starting with this one and all that. What do you think is important – keeping it between the lines and just staying focused and all that? What's give us a menu of things that you got to do.
Don't change anything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, don't fix what's not broken. You know what I'm saying? One step at a time, like, literally one day at a time. I understand we're 10-3 going into week 14 now?
15.
And you have to still continue to take it one day at a time. You can't look forward. You know, you look forward. That's how we get in those miscues during the game. So we got to handle Miami, and then once we handle Miami, get ready for the next week, and then move on from there. But we have to just stay focused on what we have in front of us and not ahead of us, because that's how really good teams start losing the last two games of the season and missing out on a home berth bye week in the playoff. We have to stay focused on Miami. Let's handle our payback, because we didn't show up the first time we played them. So we got to stay focused. And
what's your – speaking of Miami, what's kind of your take on those guys? I mean, they were high-flying on a 5-6-game winning streak, and they've come back down to earth here these last 2 weeks. San Fran handled them. They got the number one defense in football. That's not terribly surprising. But then the Chargers kind of flipped the script on them defensively. They're playing press man on first and second down and playing zone on third down. That's like opposite of what most normal teams do. They're dropping a middle linebacker into a single high safety look and bringing the safeties up in the middle of the field. They had Tua all sorts of crossed up last week.
I'm not going to lie, though. Miami has definitely surprised me this year. I didn't expect them to have the success that they're having this year. But Tua's reeling and dealing, especially after his injury.
I'll say this, too. I give a lot of credit to Mike McDaniel for how he's handled
schemed it up.
And captured the emotion of the locker room to get it pointed in the right direction. Because there was some turmoil, it seemed, in Miami about, was Tua going to be good enough? Mm-hmm. Was he good enough? And McDaniel handled it really well. So that's, you got to give him credit. He has promoted a culture in their building that has allowed at least their quarterback to really thrive. And a lot of people 12 months ago didn't think that would happen.
For sure. And, playing against Miami – I haven't really seen the culture the way it is, as far as like in the Miami locker room, the way it is for them now.
Yeah,
their confidence is through the roof. I'm not saying before they weren't, but it's just you can tell it's a totally different energy, totally different vibe from where they thought they were going to be last year to where they're at now. So, coach, that coach is doing a heck of a job out there.
Let's go back to week three briefly. It's about 120 degrees on the field. Mm-hmm. Now, you've played early season games down there before. I know you're a Texas boy, so you're used to heat. I mean, what do you got, like 50, 60 days of 100 degrees down there every year? That's insane. But the Bills come in shorthanded with a ton of injuries. Mm-hmm. They got two rookies starting a corner, you know, in Benford and Elam. And they got Jaquan Johnson and Damar Hamlin starting at safety. I mean, you basically have Taron Johnson and all backups, mm-hmm. you know, in their nickel package. And they held it down. I mean, Tyreek only has two catches for 33 yards. Waddle kind of had a couple of big plays, including one that was key for the go-ahead score. And they're dropping like flies the whole game because they got to sit in the sun, as mm-hmm. you know, and the Dolphins are sitting over there in the shade.
Yeah.
I mean, the team literally had to try to beat the Dolphins and the Heat in the same game. What do you remember about early season Miami games and had it been an issue before? Because we had guys throwing up at halftime, getting IVs and all of that stuff.
I mean, it's definitely totally different. While we're in training camp, I think the highest in training camp may be 89, maybe 85.
Yeah.
So dealing with that for as many weeks as it is leading up to going to Miami and then playing in 105 degree, it's a total difference, especially if you're not hydrated. The Heat, if y'all notice, the way the stadium is set up, they make it to where the sun is pointing
at the visiting sideline.
So having that sun beam on you like that, it does
take
even when you're sitting down.
Right?
Yeah, even when you're sitting down, it definitely takes a toll on you. But it's 105 degree weather. I mean, it's just when I was in training camp, I used to wear a hoodie over my pads and put a hoodie on my helmet just so I can get acclimated to the heat. Even though I am from Texas, I live in Buffalo, and Buffalo doesn't have that same heat index as Texas does. So you kind of get used to that normal heat Buffalo weather.
Talking to a lot of the players this week, they said the biggest problem week three was the dang humidity because mm-hmm. it was like 105 degrees but on the field, but it was like 88%
humidity that
and
matters.
It just sucks. It literally sucks the hydration out of your body.
Especially when you're tired, you're not feeling like you're getting that fresh air when you're trying to breathe. So like when you run, let's just say a fade route and you got to come back, you're trying to get that air, but all you feel
is good air.
It's not good air. It's straight heat, humidity, sweat, everything. And you feel like you're not getting that grasp air that you need.
Yeah, I'll say this. Cold air. Yeah, and I played down there as well back, in the 80s mm-hmm. and 90s. And I was saying before the game, they said, well, it's really going to be hot. And I was like, I don't know. We'd go down there even early in the season. We played down there opening day one time in 1989. And then you go down late in the season whenever. I'd never had a game down there like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I played – I was there – I was with the team a whole decade, 11 years. We never had a game like that. So that type of atmosphere is as rare there
mm-hmm.
as this – atmosphere
Saturday
up
night.
Here is going to be up here because
right.
we we'll get bad weather, but a foot of snow, no.
Yeah.
So
bad weather here would be like 6 feet of snow. That's bad.
People used to say, "Hey, what are you going to do in the heat in Miami?" We used to get off the plane and soak it up like a sponge, man. It was great. We're up here practicing, like you say, in hoodies and mm-hmm. parkas and warm. But you go down there and you get off the plane, it's like wow.
It hits you as soon as you get off that plane. You feel the humidity.
I said the same thing about them getting off the plane here today.
Oh yeah. They're definitely going to feel that.
Oh, it's a smack in the face.
That skin is going to come off that bone, I'm telling you. That when that wind comes in, that wind chill, it hits different.
My point was, I kind of poo-pooed the heat thing in the run-up to that week three game.
Mm.
But yeah, I was proven completely wrong because I never again done it. I've been there 10 years. Mm-hmm. We never had a game like that.
Yeah.
That was a bad game.
Yeah.
That was a really rough
game. All right, so tell us, Aaron, because Bills fans always want to know, like, what are you up to? And, you're back home in Texas and – kind of just doing your thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing what I wasn't able to do beforehand. I'm traveling a lot. I just got back from Columbia a few weeks ago.
Oh, cool.
Mentoring high school, college, and some professional athletes. Developing an app/website with my dad, helping high school athletes get a chance to get scholarships.
Okay.
And we all know that 5-4 stars get all the publicity and stuff. So we're trying to get those kids who are dark horses, those 2-3-1 stars that are really, really good athletes but don't have the attention around them that others do. So doing that, real estate, just trying to keep busy. It's this whole retired life is different. I have a lot of time on my hands, and I don't have a set schedule, so every day is something's new. But I'm enjoying it. I'm loving it. I have no complaints about it whatsoever.
Because your whole family's down there, right? Everybody's home.
Everybody's in Texas.
Nice. I tell people, when I retired from the league, they always say, wow, what do you think about retirement? How's it going? I was like, yeah, I recommend it.
Yeah, absolutely. I wake up and just be like, hey, what do I want to do today? It's awesome, but at the same time, it's a yin and yang. It gets old after a while.
Yeah, you got
to
have something.
You got to have something to do. After a while, waking up and not knowing what to do gets old and boring, and you feel confused and you don't know what's going on. So,
well, it's good. You got a lot of irons in the fire. That's good, man.
Absolutely.
Good for you.
For sure.
Good luck with all of that.
Thank you.
And if you're going to the game, be on the lookout for this guy.
Come say what's up.
Number 23.
You know what's crazy is a lot of people, when I go to the games, a lot of people will stare at me. They'll be like, and then I'll look at them and be like, is that him?
Yeah.
You guys, come holler at me. I'm a human being.
Like, well, I think that you find that in Buffalo, like me being from the New York metropolitan area, people are not shy down there. They'll bum rush a professional athlete in a second and not even think about it. Here, I tend to think that Buffalonians are a little bit more respectful of your personal space. You know, they know you're a busy person. They know you're probably approached a lot. And so I think there's this respectful distance that fans keep. But
I love that.
Aaron's inviting it.
I love
so
the respect.
If you see him,
come say what's up.
If you see him, come say hi.
I'm with
be.
The people.
I'm at the game.
So it's like you expect to be approached.
Yeah, you sign up for it. It's fun, and it'll be great. And by the way, you're going to be at the Buffalo store again.
I'm going to read it all here.
Have you been in that place?
I have, yeah.
I was there, I think,
last year. I had a sign.
That has
there.
Quickly become one of my favorite, aside from the store here on the property where actually I get an employee discount. the Buffalo store is awesome.
It is. There's a lot of
variety of stuff. I love
that stuff.
You get stuff that you never get to see anyplace else. It's pretty cool.
So Aaron will be at the BFLO store on Transit Road 5 to 6 p.m. tonight for free autograph signings. And then on Saturday, if you are coming out to the game and tailgating, keep an eye out for him. He's going to be in the tailgate lots cruising around in a golf cart, provided that thing's got four-wheel drive.
I hope he can handle the snow.
So look for Aaron and Billy Buffalo. They'll be cruising around trying to say hi to some people. And then obviously he'll be getting you all amped up right before kickoff. Aaron, thanks for popping in.
Hey,
great to
see
you.
Thank you guys for having me.
We will take a break here, but when we come back, it is time for Tailgate Friday. Let us know what your plans are. We'll read them off here next on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, like we do every Friday, it's Tailgate Friday, presented by Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York, the official health care plan of the Buffalo Bills. For those of you that are new to Tailgate Friday, this is when we ask you, the fan, what your plans are regarding tailgating before the game. What's on the menu? What are the plans? Who are you going with? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We begin with Jeremy, who says, arriving at Danny South around noon. Sausage, peppers, and onions will be had along with delicious hoppy beverages with a portable pizza oven cranking out pizzas for 8 hours. I like the sound of all of that. What do you think? Sausage and peppers and then portable pizza oven?
I'm all about it.
That oven is going to be challenged, outside
Bring extra fuel.
Because I think you can run those off a propane tank.
Yeah. Or bring extra firewood or something, whatever it is. You bring extra. Here's the thing. You get out there, we've all had outdoor parties in the winter. About a month ago, I had like a four-day one. You got to do something. And eating is the perfect outlet for standing around a snowstorm. It is. Little-known fact.
You can play cornhole in a snowstorm.
Drinking is a close second.
The bags will still fly, you know.
Huh? Yeah.
You can play cornhole in a snowstorm. The bags are heavy enough. They'll, you know, unless the wind's ridiculous.
Nah, it's not going to be that windy. But that I love that. That's a great. And what about here's
8 hours though? They're committing
to. That's just what I was going to say.
That's a commitment.
Around noon. You're in for the long haul then, because I'll say that you almost have to eat twice, right? You have to eat something for lunch, or like after you get there, you set up, you're eating about 1:30, right? Well, then you got to have supper around like 6.
Yeah, because you're not going into the game without dinner.
Right. And then you got like, then what time are you going to try and make your way over Danny South, that's, you know,
it's like a quarter mile walk.
Third of a mile walk, yeah. So I'm, yeah, that's, you, and I'm sure this is not the first time they've been in that spot, so they know all this, but for me, that's the first thing. You got to know how long it's going to take you to walk in, where your seats are, how you're, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
That's good, though. That's a good menu.
Hurricane says, heading to Kettle's Lot at 2:30, bringing lots of beer, hot dogs, and some burgers. That's pretty run-of-the-mill, but that's fine.
Good stuff.
Whatever floats your boat. Eamon says, our Mud Lot Saturday and night menu. Smoked salmon crostini for the Squish the Fish theme. Tortilla soup with grilled peppers and chicken to keep us warm. Chipotle beef tacos with cojita and cilantro to keep us strong. And a bucket of chicken to keep us honest. Lot of chicken in there. I am all about the Chipotle beef tacos, though. All about that.
See, they're Saturday and night menu. Yeah, that's it. All day Saturday and
yeah, it's a two meal tailgate.
Yes,
if you get out here for lunch.
If you get out here for lunch, and think about it, if you come earlier, and here's the thing too. After the game, if you're sitting there, and I've been in this thing too, where I got one of those rare games where I didn't have any response, and we weren't going to do Bills tonight after the game. I didn't have anything to do; just watch the game. Like so, I was like everybody else, and if you get out of the game and you don't leave early, which nobody leave early tomorrow, you're stuck in traffic. So you may as well fire the grill up again and eat before you leave.
Yep.
The lots across the way on 20A, and I'm sure some of the other lots, you know, the neighborhood lots down 20A between 219 and the stadium and Abbott.
Yeah.
You're not going anywhere.
Cotija, in case you didn't know what that was.
Are you saying it right?
I am.
I know you're trying. I know you're trying really hard.
Cotija. It is an aged Mexican cheese, apparently.
Oh, okay.
From Brandt, I'm doing a flank steak with chimichurri and herb potatoes fried on the flat top. Also a mud lotter. I'm planning on walking around and meeting a lot of Bill's Mafia this Saturday.
That's fun, too. How do you... Well, I like doing that because people introduce themselves to me. Like, we had Aaron Williams on... People don't hesitate to come up and talk to me. I love that. I'm all about it. I love meeting everybody. I love saying hi to everybody. For me, it's the fun part of the game.
I think flank steak is a smart steak to bring to a cold weather tailgate.
Why is that?
Because it doesn't take long to cook it.
Right.
You know?
Gotcha. That makes sense.
That thing, you can flip it over once and it's done in like 8 to 10 minutes, provided your flat top grill's heated up properly.
Right.
Finally, Mark on the tailgate Friday tweet sheet. Meatball bombers and martinis. Let's go.
Let's go.
I am all about that. I love that combination.
Right. The only way that could be better is if he said, I got little tiny meatballs that I put in the martini instead of olives.
I'm not putting meat in my drink.
Yeah.
There are lines we don't cross.
It all
cross,
goes the
Steve.
Same spot. martinis and meatballs.
Woo!
I'm going to open up a new restaurant with that. That's
that
a
could
good
be
one.
A name for a restaurant.
Wow, martinis and meatballs. Let's go. Love it.
I do love that. Great Mark, submissions great. This week. Nice job, everybody. That is Tailgate Friday, presented by Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York, the official healthcare plan of the Buffalo Bills. We will take a break here because when we come back, hour number two on a Friday, you know who's showing up. It's the master of the X's and O's. It is Greg Cosell, senior producer from NFL Films, coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, here we are, hour number two. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you on a Friday, and you know what that means. It means now is the time to be joined by senior producer from NFL Films, co-host of the ESPN NFL Matchup Show. It is one Greg Cosell joining us. How are we doing, Greg?
How are you guys doing? Getting ready for a little snow, huh?
Oh, yeah. We're telling everybody coming to the game they better put a shovel in the trunk of their car if they want to get out of here afterwards. They may need it.
Yeah, well, you guys deal with that. You know, I live, obviously, outside of Philadelphia, and I'm not a big snow fan, you know? Never was.
Did you?
3 inches is a lot of snow. I guess I wouldn't go over well in Buffalo, huh?
Did you hear how Greg said that? Wow, you guys deal with that. Did you hear that? Yeah. Did you hear the disdain for the snow? Oh, my gosh.
It's the unwillingness to put your arms around it and embrace it is the troubling part.
Oh, I'm very aware of my unwillingness to do that. Yeah. I have very good self-awareness about that.
All right. Well, let's begin here, Greg, because there has been a lot of talk about this week. People are wondering if Tua and this offense has turned into a pumpkin. The last 2 weeks, San Francisco goes with a much different approach than the Chargers go with the last 2 weeks. Both are equally effective against that Dolphins offense. Tua, it looked supremely crossed up last Sunday night. As I think I might have been more impressed with Brandon Staley's game plan than San Francisco's, because D'Amico Ryans has oodles of talent to work with. Brandon Staley, not so much last week for the Chargers. He goes and plays press man on early downs and goes and backs off on third downs, and then he even switched it in the second half. We can get into the whole plan in a second, but Leslie Frazier's got a lot to pick from on the menu. Obviously, he's going to do what he feels his unit can do best, but there are little bits and pieces he can take from each of these two game plans and utilize from time to time on Saturday night, can he?
Yeah, look, I think that what Brandon Staley did, and I know Brandon Staley a little bit. He is a very aggressive mindset guy, and he's, you know, it took a lot to decide to go that route because, like you said, Brownie, they played press man, and then they also played a good amount of cover two where you can press the receivers because you have two safeties over the top. And no team had really done that with the amount that the Chargers did. That was really their game plan. And you know, he pretty much said that, hey, if you can't disrupt Tua, because their offense is built on quick rhythm, quick timing throws, particularly in normal down and distance situations, if you can't get to Tua, then who else do you have to disrupt? The receivers. It's one or the other, and you're not going to disrupt Tua, so let's disrupt the receivers. And he did it. He was only burned one time on the 60-yard touchdown when Mike Davis fell down. The other thing that was really interesting is they play boundary corner and field corner in Los Angeles, the Chargers. And Mike Davis is the boundary corner. There were snaps, guys, in that game where they literally had Davis play zero man on Hill, and they would bring the boundary safety into the middle of the field to close down windows. So he took a super aggressive approach. I'm not a big blueprint guy. I think you nailed it, Brownie, when you said other teams might take bits and pieces, you know, because I just don't think, like, I don't think the Bills would echo that exact approach.
Right.
You know, that's
right.
Not the way they play. And I think the other factor we do have to keep in mind, and it might not play out tomorrow night because weather will obviously be a factor, but assuming a normal fast track, you know, Mike McDaniel, who I know as well, he's not an idiot. You know, they're going to have some adjustments as well. It's always, you know, that's what the game is.
Right.
You know, one team does something and then it works, and then the other side evolves and adjust, and you'll see that over time. Obviously, Bills fans don't care what the Dolphins do in 3 weeks. They care about tomorrow night.
Right. And what have we've seen a couple of people say that one of the things the Dolphins have done well and depend on is Tua's ability to throw the ball between the numbers.
Correct.
And the Niners were able to clog those lanes up by saying, if you're going to beat us, you're going to do it 10 yards down the field outside the numbers. And Tua struggled to do that. But it was also, there seems another element, particularly in the Charger game and also in the San Francisco game, where Tua doesn't know where to go with the football.
Correct.
So because how much of each of those is important?
Couple of points here. The last one first. Tua is extremely rhythmic, Steve, and his whole game is built on he hits his back foot, he knows where to go, he's decisive, he turns it loose. If he hits that back foot and something shows that tells him I can't be decisive, hey, I can't throw it or I want to, he's not the same quarterback. He's not really a late in the down, as we say, pocket quarterback. He needs to play rhythmically. And nor does he have a big arm. So he can't really sit on his back foot and wait for things to happen and then drive the ball at the intermediate levels. That's not his game. So now getting to another point you made, the Niners, look, I think Fred Warner's the best linebacker in football. He's also 6'3". And Fred Warner is phenomenal at playing between the numbers and between the hashes in pass coverage. You know, so you're dealing with and Greenlaw. Look, they have two outstanding nickel linebackers. I think that the Bills have two really good nickel linebackers as well. But Warner is a different animal than Edmonds. Warner has more, almost more corner type skills than Edmonds. Warner can do those kinds of things. I don't think Edmonds is quite that kind of player. So the Niners had talent, as Brownie, you said, the Niners have really good talent. So they could almost play somewhat normal, whereas the Chargers kind of stepped out of the normal and did something that really no team had done against the Dolphins.
Maybe just talk to us a little bit, because the Chargers also kind of defeated some of that the missile motion that they used with Hill and even with Waddle at times. First, maybe just explain to our listening audience how missile motion might be slightly different from just regular motion and how it helps a fast receiver, and then what the Chargers did to defeat that, and then whether or not you think the Bills can employ some of that.
That's something they probably could employ. So let's just talk about that a little bit. So one of the things we've seen all year long, and it's a really good strategy by the Dolphins, they normally do it with Hill, is they would take Hill from one side of the formation and they run him across. It looks like initially jet motion, but then he'd go all the way across and literally to the side of Waddle, almost as if they'd have a stack release. Okay, so when you do that, it is difficult to press that, and the stack release also makes it difficult to press, and therefore Hill is flying off the line of scrimmage because he's running. He's in motion. He's running hard across the formation. So what the Chargers did is they basically switched. Instead of trying to stay with the matchups and have a corner run across with Hill, and he's going to be trailing him, and he's going to be off the ball, and it's going to be difficult to defend him, they would just switch it up, and they would then match it. And it didn't show right away to Tua as a clean throw. And that's just what we were talking about, is that if he can't hit that back foot and make a clean throw, it's more difficult for him. So that's the missile motion that they use. They've had really good success with it. I did a piece on it in the matchup show, probably week 4, week 5, week 6, somewhere earlier in the season, because it's really hard to defend. But they chose to switch, and therefore, early in the down, the first 6-7 steps by Hill and Waddle, they didn't show up as really viable throws, and that's what happens. You know, Tua is he gets caught a little bit, and that's what happened.
So it seems like the key is obviously making Tua uncomfortable, which is basically the game plan for just about every team with the opposing quarterback every week. But do you think the Bills are better equipped to muddy the look, so to speak, knowing they have Poyer and Tre'Davious White back there, you know, two players who know how to disguise as veteran players, two guys they did not have in week 3?
Correct. I mean, you know, that week 3 game was a very odd game for the defense. First of all, the Dolphins only ran 39 plays, but Ingram was playing in that game at corner. I believe both Hamlin and Johnson were the safeties in that game, if memory serves me correct. Is that right, Brownie?
Yeah, that's right.
Taron
Johnson was the only regular in their nickel package.
There you go. So, I mean, this is a different defense right now, and obviously White's back, you know, being White. I mean, he literally matched up to Wilson last week, and he played every snap, so he obviously is ready to go. So, this will be a totally different defense. And as you said, Brownie, they'll take bits and pieces situationally of what the last two teams did. Look, the Bills defense is pretty talented. You know, obviously the Niners are real good, but the Bills defense has talent. It's not as if they're trying to compensate for poor talent. So the question is, and now you're dealing with the weather as well, because I'm very curious to see Tua, who is, like we said, very rhythmic and does not have a big arm, how that's going to play out in this kind of weather. I mean, this could be a 13-10 game, a 10-7 game where teams have to run the ball, and that's just the nature of the evening.
Right, and we've also seen games where in weather like this that turned into a 44-34 game as well because the defense can't stand up. And I've said this too. Everybody says, well, when the weather's like this, this happens and this happens. You don't always know that that's the case.
No.
Because the simple fact of the matter is it could snow one day and this field could be as slippery as can be. And the next time you play it in snow, it's not that slippery and teams are able to do a lot more things. Defenses are able to do a lot more things. So it really is a game-by-game take on what the weather's going to do. The one thing that's always constant is the wind, and the wind could be a factor in this, and certainly the temperature and the snow are going to be a problem for ball handling. But that, again, is an unpredictable thing. Turnovers are the unpredictable stat that really has so much to do with the outcome. So when you talk about this, the Dolphins' defense has not gotten many turnovers. They don't seem to be a team that, although they did look pretty good against the Chargers, their defense doesn't seem to get after the quarterback on a consistent basis, although they have at times. And what's their personality defensively in a game like this, given the weather and all of that stuff?
Well, it's hard to know if they'll make any, you know, true tactical changes, but I would say that there's not a lot of mystery to the way the Dolphins play defense. They play a lot of man coverage and they pressure, and they show a lot of pressure front looks. So that's kind of their defensive profile. Now, that can, the degrees with which they do those things can certainly vary on a week-to-week basis. But as you guys know, over the last 3 years, going back to the 2020 season, for the most part, the Bills have not had a lot of problems attacking their man coverage. Then I think they switched up one game and played a lot of zone, and the Bills didn't have a lot of problems with that either. So the Bills have been pretty good against this defense over the last 3 years. I mean, even in the game week three, where I believe Josh dropped back over 70 times and the Bills ran 90 plays, you know, they had success moving up and down the field. It wasn't as if they were shut down. So they've been able to throw the ball against this defense. And I know people are out. I think Eric Rowe is out.
Yep.
I think someone else is out. I mean, I
his backup, Elijah Campbell, is also out. So
he's also out. I saw that.
The word is they're going to start the rookie. Verone McKinley is going to make just his second start of the season, which was going to be my next question, Greg, because when you have a young, inexperienced safety out there, what have offensive coordinators told you over the years as to how you might be able to take advantage of an inexperienced safety in coverage?
Yeah, and he's been playing basically in their in their dime. But now if he starts, because obviously Holland is a really, really good player, and they use him as their back end safety, and also when they blitz, he's up at the line of scrimmage. McKinley's an interesting guy. I kind of liked his tape a lot when I watched him coming out of Oregon. I think he has a playmaking dimension to his game. I think you can get him to be aggressive. He's a very aggressive player. So I think you need to try to create scenarios, Brownie, where he's aggressive. And you can do that, you know, maybe it's double moves. Maybe it's, it's a certain number of receivers to one side, but I think you can probably attack him. The question is, how will they use him? Will they use him essentially as a box player? Because when he plays in their dime, he's not really a box player. So, because Holland normally, unless he's going to line up on the line of scrimmage in their pressure looks and blitz, then he's the back end safety and he's really good at it. So McKinley might be forced to play in a way in which he's not really comfortable. I'm really curious about the Bills passing game. They obviously signed Beasley for a reason. We don't have to interpret that. They signed Beasley for a reason. They brought him back because obviously the passing game has not been over the last number of weeks as consistent as it was earlier in the season. They weren't their first five serious punts this week.
First time that's happened this season.
And I thought Josh was a little tentative in that game. I thought in the second half he started to seem a little more comfortable. I thought, the throw that told me he was getting more comfortable was the out route to Davis, which I think may have been the first possession of the third quarter. I can't remember, but that was the ball where I said, okay, now he's feeling a little more comfortable. This offense hasn't been as aggressive. I think if we're being honest, guys, and, you know, that's the only way I know how to do it based on tape study, I think that they probably haven't gotten on a week-to-week basis what they were hoping to get out of Gabriel Davis.
I would say that's accurate to some extent. I was going to ask you about that a little bit because I was wondering what's up with Gabe Davis. How much do you believe it's Davis's failure to get consistent separation, and how much do you believe it's scheme-oriented where maybe they're not drawing up as many one-on-one opportunities for him? Because a lot of times, Greg, I see him as just the clear-out guy. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah. You know what? I'm always Larry Brownie, and I'm just being honest, and I know you guys will appreciate this. You know, it's always hard for me comfortably. Obviously, I have my opinions, but because I'm not in the meetings and I'm not there with installations,
right?
You know, I'm always a little uncomfortable about talking about scheme. But to me, there is something to that. Now, hey, I'm sure if Ken Dorsey was sitting here, maybe he'd tell me I'm nuts, okay? And maybe I am. But I think that I would tend to agree with you to some extent. I feel like they could do a better job in terms of getting other receivers involved and open through route concepts and combinations. That's just my take watching the film. Now, again, that's... You know, I do want to qualify that because I don't know how it's taught, yep. And I don't know, you know, what they do on the practice field. But I think there is some merit to that based on tape study.
How much do you think Beasley, I mean, first of all, that he's back, that's number one. Number two, if he's up and he's active and he plays, how much is that a prompting by the offensive staff to get Josh to go to the check down options more often? Because it seems like this has been something that's been happening over the last several weeks, maybe most notably in week 9 and week 10, where Josh is wanting, maybe a little too much, to push the ball down the field when he has an easy check down for 8 or 10 yards. They've tried for the last 4 weeks to get him to do more of that. It's happened on occasion, but not terribly often. I feel like this is a prompting on the part of the staff. Hey, here's a guy you trust. Check it down to him if you're not going to check it down to anybody else.
And I think that's fair as well, you know, because we know that Beasley is really good at finding voids in coverage, particularly zone. You know, McKenzie theoretically has been the man beater guy, but he obviously had two drops last week. And I don't know if that prompted them to go get Beasley, but, you know, Beasley is obviously a guy, as we saw in the previous number of years, that Josh Allen is really comfortable throwing the ball to. He knows how to find voids. He knows how to find space. And he's a chain mover, and that's ultimately what you want to do. Because, look, I guess I was, you know, this gets back now to the whole offensive philosophy and approach, which, like I said, you know, I don't say this with great confidence, but I see the tape. You know, I thought they would run the ball more or less. We coming off what they did the week prior against the Patriots with, you know, the pony package, which they didn't only ran 4 or 5 times this week, and James Cook running the ball. They didn't really run the ball this week. And, you know, that struck me as interesting as well. But yeah, I think that, yeah, and one thing I will say, and I don't know if they talked to Josh Allen about this. I think there have been times this year, Brownie, more recently, where he's left the pocket too soon. And, you know, I think he can, the thing is he can make special plays doing that, like the play against New England where he threw the touchdown at Davis.
Right.
So we all get, you know, excited about those plays, but I think there are times he leaves the pocket too soon.
What about the ability to run the football against this Dolphin team? This is, you know, it may be, like you said, dictated by the weather anyway. But on a level playing field in a dome stadium, what would the matchup look like without the weather being a factor?
I think the Dolphins, you know, they have multiple fronts because, you know, just like every team does with personnel. And then it would depend on what the Bills' personnel is, whether they're going to play with a fullback or not. Or, you know, if they play 11 personnel, then you're not going to get the 5-2 front that the Dolphins play as their base defense. You know, I'll answer it this way, Steve. I personally believe that the Bills have to try to run the ball more no matter who they play against. Because I just, you know, I think we all – and I'll be the first to admit this. Coming off last season, and I'm sure you guys felt the same way, with the two games that Josh Allen had in the playoffs and the last two and a half years that he's had, you know, I think we all got caught up in that this guy's Superman and that this guy is the most physically gifted quarterback in the league, which he is if you look at just raw physical traits, and that, you know what, every week he's just going to be super special because that's who he is. And I think sometimes that can camouflage some concerns you have throughout the rest of your offense because you assume that he's going to make those special plays every single week. And that's unrealistic. So you have to find other ways offensively to move the ball and to win. And, you know, I think they've been struggling to do that on a weekly basis. I think that's a fair statement.
Let's just take a look at some of the young pass rushers here for the Bills before we let you go, Greg. And, yep. You know, absent Von Miller, who's no longer part of the equation, Greg Rousseau has done a nice job the last 2 weeks, you know, had 2 sacks along with the forced fumble. Ed Oliver's flashed, so too has A.J. Epinesa the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So maybe just give me your synopsis and what the film has told you about these young pass rushers, knowing once again they're going against a quarterback where they know where he's going to be.
And the ball comes out quick, Brownie.
Right.
So this is more, to me, of a early downs, normal down and distance. Your coverage has to be the deciding factor. If you get them into a good number of third and longs, then the pass rush has to win. Now, Armstead, he's playing, so he's a really good left tackle. I think they've got some other concerns along their offensive line that ideally the Bills can exploit. But it's really going to be more in long yardage situations where Tua can't just take the quick, you know, the quick three-step rhythm throws where he has to kind of drop back and throw the football down the field a little bit more. That's where it's going to have to happen. But Rousseau, I've been pleasantly surprised by Rousseau. I'll be the first to admit when he came out that I wasn't sure if he could be this kind of player. And again, I'm not suggesting he's, you know, the best pass rusher in the league, but I think he's shown in his 2 years in the league that he can be a pretty quality edge pass rusher. He knows how to use his length really well, and I think he'll continue to get better at that.
Great stuff, Greg. Thanks for coming along with us today. Appreciate it. It's good to see you. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Stay warm and safe, all right?
Yeah, thank you
very
much.
Come up and visit. Come up, bring a snowshoe. Come on.
Yeah, you know what? I think maybe I'll do that in the spring.
You'll love it.
Spring is May here, just so you know, Greg. You thanks very much.
Okay.
We appreciate it. That's Greg Cosell joining us, senior producer from NFL Films, also co-host of the ESPN NFL Matchup Show. Steve and I will take a break here. When we come back, we'll take a look at some of the OBL Friday fan mailbag questions and answer those for you next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
The 20, the 10, the 5, touchdown Snapdragon apples. This Bills season, head to your local Wegmans to experience the epic flavor and monster crunch of Snapdragon apples, the official apples of your Buffalo Bills. Time for us to spin the wheel on the magic that is the OBL Friday Fan Mailbag.
Let's go!
And the tweet sheet on the OBL Friday Fan Mailbag, brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. And John leads us off with a statement. Activate Duke Johnson and go run heavy in the snow with Motor, Cook, and Hines. Your guess as to whether Beasley is activated. If the snow is measurable, much like it was for the Colts game, Steve, you're going to have to run the football probably more than you anticipated. I don't know if you need a fourth guy up to do that, though. I think you're fine with Motor, Cook, and Hines, right? Like, that's
enough. Don't run somebody else's
and you
offense.
Got Reggie Gilliam back in the lineup.
No. Don't run somebody else's offense. Go out and sling it. You're a passing offense.
Oh, you still want to throw it?
Of course. It's what you do. That's who you are. Why would snow or – I mean, what are you going to do? Run some, you've no, no, no. The only way you do that, I got now my thing broke in my ear here. The only way you change what you do is if it's impossible to do what you do normally. Hmm. You got to, these guys are going to be good enough to get it done. They're going to be good enough to get it done.
Are receivers going to be able to run routes?
Of course, they're going to be able to run routes. Are they going to be able to cover them?
Yeah.
You're playing against backup corners. Come on, man. Or safeties, backup safeties.
One backup safety, yeah.
Just do what you do.
Okay.
Because think about what the Dolphins are looking at. They can't run the ball a lick.
Yeah, in good conditions.
In good conditions.
If they can't throw it, you don't have to worry about it anyway. Come, let's go.
Yeah.
They're going to come out and throw it. You need to throw it. Run your offense. Don't think because the weather's sloppy and you and I are going to be sitting in snowbanks to watch them that they can't do their thing. They're going to be fine. They're going to, you got to at least, you got to go out and make them think you think you can run your offense. You're the home team. You're the guys who live in this. You're the ones who know what you can get done. You got to show them. Show them. You don't have to, don't try and beat a team left-handed without trying to beat them with your strength.
Yeah, I get it.
You know, I mean, if, okay, that's all I'm saying.
Just, as for,
you don't need to go in there trying to be somebody else.
Yeah.
You're the number one seed, for goodness sakes almighty.
As for our best guess as to whether Beasley is activated, I would anticipate, yes, he will be. The question is, how long does he play? How many snaps does he get? But I think it's a pretty good bet that he's up on Saturday night. And as we mentioned earlier in the show, the Bills have until 4 p.m. on Saturday elevate practice squad players.
Every other game, you have to do it. If it's a night game, you can do it at 4 o'clock that day.
Only right? If the game is Saturday or Thursday.
And what about Monday? Yes, Monday too.
And Monday too, I believe. If night it's a games, Sunday game, it's got to be the day before at 4 p.m.
Even if it's a night game, right. But Thursday, Monday, you can do it the day of at 4 o'clock for some reason. Or Saturday.
If it's a night game.
This is all confusing now.
That's why.
Here's the problem.
Shouldn't have gone down that path.
Right. Exactly. Now I'm in the weeds. I don't know. What am I talking about here? Okay. My Christmas shopping is done. No. The Bills have till 4 o'clock tomorrow to activate guys, elevate guys off the practice squad or whatever they're on. Because it's a Saturday night game. Now, think about this. The Saturday at 1 o'clock game and the Saturday at 4:25 game, they have to do it today at 4.
Yep.
Today.
Yep.
Not tomorrow. Same thing for a Monday night game. They get until Monday at 4 o'clock to elevate their guys for those games. And for Thursday night games, it's the same thing. It's the day of the game. But for Sunday night games, the ones we see all have seen, they got to do
Saturday at 4,
same as the Bills. What are they doing?
It's a little weird. They got to make it a uniform thing.
Well, yeah, you should just put it, 4 o'clock the day before,
every game. 4 o'clock. Whenever time your game is, it's 4 p.m. the day before.
Who cares if when we find out about it anyway, but still.
Anyway, question coming from Bakes, who asks, which team has the advantage in the whiteout, the Dolphins in white or the Bills in red? Well, I would say offensively it would be the Bills in red. Easier to see your teammates running around out there, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And the Bills will be wearing their Color Rush red uniforms, which will stand out very nicely in a snowstorm.
Those things are going to pop, man. It's going to be awesome.
They popped in 2017.
Oh, my
gosh. Popped off the field.
I'm telling you, I've said it before. That game was a work of art.
Yeah.
Visually.
From Bill's Mafia Dad, this offense looks so awesome in hurry up, but it's only used sparingly. Do you think this offense should use it more going forward to increase productivity? Yeah, it's funny. The Bills, more often than not, will score at the end of the first half, especially when they win the coin toss, with a two-minute drill drive when it's, a little bit up-tempo. And the Bills tried to use tempo a few times against the Jets last week. They'd have a second down play. It's third and short. Bang! They'd go right up to the line and call something. And they got a couple of conversions that way. Not many, because they were 0 for 5 on third down the second half.
Yeah.
They tried it, though.
Right. I get it.
Do you go to it more? What do you think?
Listen, that's where the K-gun came from. Right. Jim got so good at going fast, and they started to realize that, and we've all heard this story a million times. I'm sorry to be an old guy telling the old same old story. What happens when you go fast and you don't substitute, the defense isn't allowed to bring guys on, and the game can go fast, because if you don't substitute, you don't have to allow them to substitute. The officials don't. And if you get a matchup you can exploit, well, what are they going to do? They got to call a timeout or change their defense somehow, some way, and it's hard to do that on the fly.
Especially if you keep converting third downs.
That's the thing. The big weakness of the hurry-up offense is that you have to make first downs. If you don't, it's a self-inflicted slow death.
Because you can wear out your defense pretty fast.
And the other team gets the ball right back. So there's two ways to do it. But that's where the K-gun came from. Jim was so – Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas, Andre, and our offensive line that was so big at the time, they started going, and they were so good in certain situations during the game, we just said, well, you know what, let's try and do that right out of the gate. And they did it like opening game of 19-something-something against Indianapolis, and it worked, and they stayed with it. So, yeah, if you get a matchup you can exploit, you do want to keep going fast.
I don't know if the Bills, this iteration of the Bills, is going to do that. I think they might do it in certain instances, or if the opponents, you find an opponent that if you get him in the wrong personnel grouping and you want to keep him on the field, maybe you go fast for that series.
Right.
But for a whole game, I just don't see that happening. From Ed in the mailbag, if the weather shuts down the passing game, who has the advantage running the ball Saturday night? Statistically, it's the Bills, because the Dolphins have not been able to run the football all season long. They're 29th in rushing. Right. One of their top two running backs is dinged with a hip injury, and their offensive line has injuries as well. Their right tackle's on IR, and they're just not a good running football team. They're just not. The Bills aren't fantastic, but they're the only team in football that has run for 100 yards in every single game this season, and your quarterback is one of the best red zone running quarterbacks right. in football. So advantage Bills in
I'll
that
say
situation.
This, yeah, if the game goes that direction where nobody can throw the football, your advantage evaporates.
And the Bills have a better run defense than
right.
the Dolphins
But your
do.
Advantage evaporates because then it becomes a question of which defensive coordinator is going to sell out to stop the run more than the other and not get taken advantage of by some little dink pass over the top that goes for a touchdown. It becomes a chess match, whereas you can put six defensive tackles on the field or however many you have and defensive ends, and you can put defensive ends at linebacker, and you can take the deep corners off the field and put linebackers in for them too. You can put 11 defensive linemen and linebackers out there and stop the run pretty easy. Mm. And it just becomes a balancing act. Okay, how can they throw it against us?
Running double wing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everybody can do it. The question, but then what advantage do you have if their defense is willing to do that? You're not going to run it on them. I don't care who it is. So, yeah, then it becomes a different kind of contest that has nothing to do with running ball.
Yeah. From TJ, not a question for Brownie and Steve, but a declaration. Josh Allen will run for 200 yards and 4 TDs. He is literally a Buffalo alien hybrid that's been waiting all his life for a snow game like this. I am available for a call-in Monday morning to take over the radio show.
Okay, put TJ on the whiteboard just in case.
The statement says it all. We'll just leave it at that. From Cole... in the mailbag.
TJ is actually right now in a camper out in the camper lot.
Yeah, he's already throwing
them
back.
Yeah.
Cole asks, do you think people have moved the goalposts for Josh in the MVP race? I think Mahomes should be clear front runner, but Hurts over Allen? 17 has more total yards and the same amount of TDs. I think Allen is so great sometimes that when he dips a little, people tend to overreact.
Yeah, I think people also were taking into account he got injured and Josh hasn't been 100%.
Yeah.
That people are like, and it's easy for people who aren't fans of his or don't have anything invested in him to say, just take him off the board because, well, he was injured, despite how the kind of year he's having.
That happened to Fred Jackson in 2011.
Absolutely.
He was having a league MVP season, and then he got dinged late in the year. He didn't even make the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, in fact of the matter is, you got guys out there like Mahomes who it's hard
every
to catch
week
him.
He's throwing for 300 yards. Josh
right.
last week throws for 146, and it's like, he's off the MVP list.
And every time Mahomes does this little sidearm, no-look, get rid of it for a touchdown, and it goes for a touchdown, people forget that he threw three picks in that game, in the Denver game. Nobody even says anything. So that's just the way life is. And the MVP is a very difficult award to win for good reason. But once you've won it once – you get a little mileage out of that in future seasons. And I think Mahomes is doing that. He deserves every good thing they say about him. We can be honest here, even as Buffalo fans.
He's good.
The guy's really great. The guy's fantastic. The league is better for him, having him in the league. He's fun to watch, even for people who don't like their team, yeah. All of that stuff. Even for Bills fans, you got to appreciate the guy. And much like, you know, other teams are like, that Josh Allen's a problem. So, yeah, it's going to be hard to catch Pat Mahomes in this season, particularly given the ease of their schedule going down the stretch. I think discerning analysts can find a lot of good reasons to give it to more than Mahomes and Josh, Jalen Hurts, all these guys. Yeah, there's arguments to be made for all three of them. But for right now, it's hard to find an argument better than the one Mahomes has put out.
Quickly from Daniel, a good friend of mine is getting married Saturday. I'm not in the wedding, but the reception runs from 6 to 10 p.m. It's an hour from home. When is a polite time to leave to watch the game? I live out of the area, so radio is not an option. I would say stream it on your phone. Oh, you're out of the area, though. That's not going to work on NFL Plus. Man, the kickoff's at 8:15 and it's 6 o'clock. You're going
to
eat dinner and run? Yeah.
6 to
People
10.
Aren't even on the dance floor by 8. That's tough.
As soon as you clear the receiving line.
You can't. Come on. What? You're not even staying for dinner? It's 6. The reception's 6 to 10. He could stay the first hour at least, wolf down dinner, and then do an Irish goodbye.
Here's the strategy.
I'm Irish, so I can say that.
You go through the receiving line and you make a big deal of it. Oh, it's been great. You know, you kind of
stunning.
Overdo it, yeah. So they know they're going to. Oh, it was great to see. And be profuse in your praise of their wedding and everything and that.
And then, if you want to cover yourself a little bit more, put an extra $50 in the card.
Yeah. Yeah, you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
Extra $50 in the little kitty.
That might cover you for cutting out early.
And then, it gives you a free hour and a half of game time.
That's the OBL Friday Fan Mailbag. Thanks for all your questions. Hopefully we helped you there, Daniel. Good luck on Saturday. That's a tough one. Yeah. We're taking a break here. When we come back, it's time to build a game plan. We'll have that for you next here on One Bills Live. Building a game plan presented by United Rentals. United Rentals is the exclusive and official construction equipment rental partner of the Buffalo Bills. Steve, for the offense, game plan, go.
You got to get some easy completions for Josh early on. Don't be afraid to let him run it. If the conditions go south, I think you just turn Josh into an option quarterback. Let him and do power sweeps right at the Dolphins. But I also think you leave the passing game in the game plan. You've got to be able to throw the football, even if it's just 5 yards down the line of scrimmage or beyond the line of scrimmage. So I think you go in there thinking you can run your offense until you prove to yourself you can't. And I think you got to give Josh some easy outlets, some check downs with the backs, with the tight ends, and with the slot receivers. It will be hard to throw the football down the field, but it could be that because of the conditions, you got guys running open deep down the field because one little hesitation move and a receiver or the DB goes down. That stuff happens in games like this. So you've got to be alert to being able to threaten the field everywhere, even if you have no intention of going down there just in case.
That's why the Bills drafted Josh Allen, to play in weather like this. Big arm, big hands, can handle it. Defensively, the Bills just have to muddy the waters for Tua. Don't make the anticipatory throws that he can make because he knows what the defense is readily apparent to him. When he hesitates, he can't make plays. It's as simple as that. Hopefully, Leslie Frazier has a plan for him. If you need something to listen to on Saturday before the game, Bills by the Numbers podcast. The new episode is up. Check it out. Steve and I will talk to you about it on Monday at noon. We'll see you then.